listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say our guest is Greg Roman, the executive director of a terrific organization based in Philadelphia, the Middle East Forum. He is a man who has had considerable experience in the subject matter on which the Middle East Forum focuses, namely, of course, the Middle East, but also threats to our country that emanate from it. He has also served as the political advisor to the Deputy Foreign Minister of Israel and worked in the Israeli Ministry of Defense. Greg Roman, it's good to have you with us. Welcome back and Happy New Year.
Thank you, Frank. It's great to be here, and I can't speak enough about the high accolades that the Center for Security Policy gets in our responsible counter-Islamist circles, and it's always a pleasure speaking with you and working with you.
Thank you. Well, those counter-Islamist circles are usually derided by others, and I did want to say a particular word of thanks to you and the Middle East Forum for your excellent riposte to one of those who is constantly inveighing against all of us, the Southern Poverty Law Center, in your new product, Field Guide to the Useful Infidels, a very well done piece of work, I think. So thank you for that. Let me ask you about this recent terrorist attack down in Florida. Greg, you of course, have a lot of experience tracking bad actors. And one of the things that has thrown a lot of people off the scent in this case, it seems, is that the alleged perpetrator, Esteban Santiago, first of all, has an Hispanic name, and second of all, had time in the United States military. Are there other things that we've learned about him that, however, suggest there may be more to it than that?
There are. There was a report that came out from Robert Spencer on Jihad Watch over the weekend, which was able to link Mr. Santiago to his viewing and consumption of information affiliated with Islamist propaganda. And I think that there's a key point here that not a lot of the mainstream media commentators have picked up on. Many of them have been categorizing this as a soldier who went to Iraq, viewed two of his close friends killed in a bomb attack, and came back and then started experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. He was inebriated by mental health issues. But what they don't try to connect is how someone who may be having a certain limited faculty with his own ability to have cognizance of what's actually going on in the world can be influenced by Islamist propaganda. So the mainstream media is calling this a case of depression gone wrong, getting onto a plane, arriving in Fort Lauderdale, and committing a premeditated act of murder against five Americans. But what they're not doing is showing how the different groups, like whether it be ISIS, Global Jihad, Al-Qaeda, the Muslim Brotherhood, are able to take advantage of individuals with mental health issues, and in doing so, are able to dig down and then get to a really distinct point where they're able to prey on individuals who may have a weaker mental disposition than others.
You know, what's interesting, Greg, though, is what this guy was doing even before he went to Iraq, which was creating at MySpace recordings of Islamic music, some of it very explicitly in the sort of vein of Islamic supremacism. So it's a complicated bit of business, I think, to be sure. But the rush to say this has nothing to do with jihadism seems to me to be, as is often the case, misplaced. Let me ask you about one other issue that I know is on your mind, too, that I want to discuss in light of your experience in Israel, but also the great work that you do at the Middle East Forum, Greg Roman, and that is, what do you make of what Barack Obama is doing on his way out the door with respect to the U.S. relationship with Israel and more to the point, really, Israel's standing in the world?
I really think that for the last 8 years, Barack Obama has been the architect of the step-by-step destruction or the attempted destruction and implosion of the U.S.-Israel relationship. I can remember going back to 2009 and 2010 when I was serving in the Israeli Defense Forces and working at the Ministry of Defense, where he would send his envoys, his political appointees, to our offices and criticize us for alleged interference in Palestinian building, asking us to stop the natural growth of Jewish towns in the West Bank. And he would every time come back with something else and a new message. And then when we saw the settlement freeze end because of Palestinian intransigence, we saw Obama blame Israel. When the second Secretary of State under his administration, John Kerry, came in after Hillary Clinton left. We saw them attempt peace negotiations. After Israel made an offer, the Palestinians refused. Of course, Obama blamed Israel. And then you saw a general slide into quiet of the Obama administration's commenting on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. But this was not because Obama became frustrated with Israel. He was actually planning interference in the Israeli election in the last Knesset elections, trying to spend hundreds of thousands of American taxpayer dollars to underrate organizations in Israel with the goal of trying to dethrone Benjamin Netanyahu from the possibility of him becoming prime minister for a fourth time.
Now, wait a minute. So you're telling me that the man who has been of late railing about alleged Russian interference in American elections has himself been deeply involved in trying to interfere with and, change the outcome of the election of a friendly nation, Israel?
Correct. And he didn't treat Israel as a friendly nation. I mean, if you know this, there were three levels of his electioneering and interference in the Knesset elections. The first was by dispatching Democratic Party advisors to Israel to advise Israeli opposition parties. Now, granted, Benjamin Netanyahu also had the assistance of Republican-oriented election advisors, but Obama's sending was in a consistent theme of Democratic Party politics going all the way back to 1996 when Bill Clinton deployed the Raging Cage and Jim's Carville to try to assist the election of Shimon Peres. And then again in 1999 with the election of Ehud Barak, which was actually able to unseat Netanyahu. Now, fast forward 16 years later to these last elections, it wasn't just sending political advisors. It was also providing international cover and attacks on the Israeli government that would provide election fodder for the Israeli opposition. And the worst case of interference was when the State Department directed, as I said before, hundreds of thousands of dollars to the Middle East Peace Initiative, something called MEPI. It's a program ran out of the Bureau of Near Eastern Affairs to support a get-out-the-vote operation and an opposition research operation against the Likud party and his coalition ally. Now, all three of these efforts failed. Now, when that happened, Obama realized that he had one last shot to try to undermine Netanyahu, his government, and largely the state of Israel in the international arena. And back in, I would say, November of 2015, President Obama started making inroads with the individuals and countries that he knew would be on the Security Council, and also he drafted a paper asking for State Department options to bring the Israeli-Palestinian conflict to a close on Palestinian terms, rather than that of protecting our ally Israel. And we saw those actions starting back in June and July when I first came out with the reporting on what the State Department was planning on doing.
Let me ask you, Greg Rumman, closing. Do you anticipate that there will be further damage in this wrecking operation at the Paris conference on the 15th of January and possibly at the UN Security Council 2 days later?
Obama has three options, and I'll start from least and then go to the worst. The first thing he may do is a Rose Garden speech after the Paris Peace Conference outlining his vision for a future Palestinian state. The second is that he may be able to bring those parameters to the Paris Peace Conference and have an international agenda drafted against Israeli interests in Paris, and that may not arrive in the Security Council. The worst option, and this is something that we have to take into consideration, is that the Paris Peace Conference may call for the establishment of a Palestinian state, not through negotiations. It might then be backed by a UN Security Council resolution, and we may even see President Obama recognize the state of Palestine.
This we will be fighting tooth and tong, as I know will you, Greg Rumman and Daniel Pipes and others associated with the important Middle East Forum. Come back to us very soon with your analyses and updates. And in the meantime, folks, check out their great work at meforum.org. Greg, thanks so much for your time today. Let's talk again very soon. Next up, Dr. Michael Rubin joins us. We'll talk about the death of Rafsanjani. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.